ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's B-Rod behind the glass filling in for an injured, sick, whatever, Brian McDonald. A Wednesday edition to the show. Already looks like it might be a getaway game for some. Astros play at 6:05 today, wink, wink. They did level the series, though, yesterday. Good to see. A lot that you can take from this game. I think there was a lot of storylines in yesterday's game. For a 3-1 game, you only have 4 runs combined in that contest. I think there were tons of storylines from the Astros' win yesterday.
No, there's absolutely no doubt about it. And I think that when everybody was looking at the series, they thought the game you had to get was the opening game of the series because you were going to face two tough pitchers, two of the better pitchers for the Giants, and that the Astros might have an uphill battle on their hands. They gave one away the night before. You didn't know how they were going to react to that, and yet they come out and they just kind of literally scratch and claw runs across, and they get themselves a win. And there were, like you said, there was a ton of positives because, you know, you got great starting pitching, you got great bullpen help, and you got just enough runs to get you over the top. So it was a good win for this team.
What do you think was the lead from yesterday's game? Do you think it was Ronel Blanco or do you think it was Ryan Pressly?
I think it should be Ronel Blanco to only give up 3 hits and pitch the way he pitched and really kind of step on his fastball again instead of using kind of the changeup and the off speed that's been good for him. But I have no doubt across Astros Twitter and fans, it was all Ryan Pressly.
Watching that, watching the game, I didn't realize Ronel Blanco punched out 8. Like, I mean, just watching it and, you know, seeing what he's doing and kind of cruise control. I mean, he really only had the one bad pitch. And even that pitch, like, it was inside. Now, was it, you know, elevated? Yeah. I mean, it was elevated more than you want a slider to be elevated. But it wasn't over the middle of the plate. It wasn't middle-middle. I mean, he missed inside. Now, he missed up with the pitch, and he got driven out. Other than that, he was terrific. And his previous 2 outings, quite frankly, weren't very good. So, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, like, has Ronel Blanco been pitching above his mean? Has he been pitching better than he's really capable of pitching over like a full season because of the back-to-back starts that were kind of meh? I mean, they weren't awful. He wasn't getting rocked all over the ballpark, and you had the questionable call against St. Louis that could have changed that outing, although you still had opportunity to get out of that inning. But his previous 2 starts have been mediocre. So I went into yesterday's game with, okay, let's get a real feel of who Ronel Blanco is. Because if he puts together his 3rd mediocre game, it's like, okay, maybe this is Ronel Blanco finding his mean. Maybe he's just kind of a middle-of-the-rotation type of guy. Or he can pitch like he did, and it's, boom, you're snapped out of that thought. Ronel Blanco has really found stuff with his changeup. He's responded nicely after the suspension. So I thought that that was an important game for the perception of one Ronel Blanco. Because if he has a mediocre game, like whatever, like he's not going to care. He's just going to try to do his best in his next start. But at least from my perception, I think the perception of fans too that are realistic with themselves, if Ronel Blanco had another meh game, 3 straight meh games, I think our perception of Ronel Blanco until he pitched again would be, he's kind of meh.
Yeah, you and I talked this week about the fact that, look, that there might be a reality check in line for Justin Verlander that he's not your ace anymore, that he's not the guy that has been so dominant throughout his career and even with his career with the Astros, and that you might have to kind of reset the pecking order of the rotation. And in doing so, we had Blanco at the top of the list under Fromber as probably your leading candidate to be number 2, and it would be him and JV in the top 3, no matter who takes what position. But that's if he pitches well, if he pitches the way he started the season. Yesterday was a way of solidifying and putting everybody's minds at ease. Hey, look, he can pitch, and he's a lot different than he was any other time in his career coming into this year. And he's really matured into a guy that it looks like when you give him the ball, you can rely on him giving you 5 or 6 good innings of baseball.
Yeah. So you go from that thought to like him pitching well, and now I'm seeing the all-star label being thrown around with Ronel Blanco. His numbers would indicate that he should be.
Warranted.
I think it's fair to say that Ronel Blanco is in the conversation to be an all-star for the American League. Now, like this would be great for the player. Like Ronel Blanco, right, making the all-star game would be awesome for him. personally, the insensitive guy that I am, I don't really care about individual accolade. I care about team success and all of that, while admitting that Renell Blanco would be a big deal for him. 6-2, 267 ERA. Like, that's an all-star level pitcher.
Yeah, that's for the individual. Any player that plays Major League Baseball, no matter how long or short of a career they have, they want to go and be able to tell their family someday and their kids and hang on the wall, hey, I made an all-star team once. I wasn't just some schlep that made the league and had a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. I made an all-star team. And, you know, the only blemish that he really has is the whole glove incident with the sticky stuff. But I don't know how that affects anybody. But at the same time, he bounced back so strongly from it right after that. Now, he's had a couple shaky starts after that. But overall, when you look at the body of work, it's for this season alone. It's for the top pitchers, and he warrants being considered as one of the top pitchers in the American League based on those numbers and how he's pitched.
Yeah, it'll be one that we'll be monitoring, because it would be a cool story for him, like career reliever, not a career reliever, but a reliever up until last year for Dana Brown. Dana Brown, okay, we need help in starting pitching depth, so we're going to convert you to a starter. Really had an up-and-down year last year. Spent a lot of it in the minor leagues, and then this year he's been very, very good. It'd be a really cool story.
I would use your term. I mean, coming into this year, he was a 4A pitcher as a starting pitcher that was looked to be a possibility as an arm that they could use in the bullpen if they needed a guy this year. And all of a sudden now he solidified his name and pen in the starting five.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see. The bullpen after that was good. You didn't have the services of Josh Hader yesterday, because Hader would have been his third day in a row, and you weren't going to do that. Taylor Scott was good. Brian Abreu was good. And then you get into the ninth inning, and here comes baby-faced Ryan Pressly. This reminded me of the Rick Vaughn scene in Major League 2, where it's kind of the reverse, though, where Rick Vaughn was like, you know, in Major League 1, he was the Harley-riding, you know, tough son of a gun. And then all of a sudden he gets to spring training in Major League 2, and he's buttoned up, and he's doing, like, deodorant and raising, like, shaving cream commercials or whatever. And then he pitches awfully. And then all of a sudden, late in the season, he goes back to his old ways, and here comes Rick Vaughn, and he's able to sit down. Was it Sam Parkman? What was Parkman's first name? I don't remember Parkman's first name. But he sits him down as he reverted back to his old self. This was Ryan Pressly last night, except the other way around. You have Ryan Pressly, this old, rugged son of a gun with, you know, the stubble. He's got kind of the stubbled beard. And then he comes into the ninth inning, baby-faced Ryan Pressly, a 1-2-3 inning against the Giants. Was cool to see. Very cool to see this. Out number two was hammered, but cool to see. 1-2-3 inning.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, for whatever the reason, because I was watching, I fell asleep last night, so I was watching the last couple innings this morning, and I'm fast forwarding through the commercials, and all of a sudden I go, wait, who the hell is that? And I had to double take it, because I'm like, did they bring up another pitcher and I missed it?
What time
and
then, did you go to bed?
I fell asleep probably around 9, no, right, I think right at 10.
Did you have supper at 5 or?
I hadn't, yeah, well, when I got home, I was racing around and doing stuff with the kid.
He didn't look like himself, though.
No, at all.
Looked completely different.
But then I'm like, okay, let's see how he does in the ninth in a save opportunity, and let's see if that makes any kind of a difference in his performance. And at least he got 1-2-3, because you're right, that ball to center field was barreled up hard. Luckily, it was just hit right at somebody.
Yeah, that was funny to see. Now, did you, if you were catching up on it this morning, mm-hmm. did you notice that Ryan Pressly got up late in the seventh inning? Ryan Pressly got up late in the seventh inning. I mean, Taylor Scott would have been in the game. I guess Taylor Scott allowed a base runner. So they got Ryan Pressly up late in the seventh inning. Scott got out of the inning. They sit down Pressly and get Abreu up, and then he pitches the eighth. I have no idea what that was about.
Why would you do it anyway? Unless, but even still, because of the pecking order, the way he went to it, does that mean that he was thinking about changing the order and that he was going to use Pressly, you know, maybe seventh and eighth, or, you know, finish the seventh if he had to, and then the eighth, and then Abreu would be your ninth? But all of a sudden, then you reverse course, and Abreu goes back, you know, and comes into the eighth, so Pressly can close it. It was kind of bizarre.
That's a decision that you should have, like, before the game, though.
Of course.
My best guess was based on the pocket of the Giant lineup, but... like, okay, you give Scott the final out there, which was against the 8-hole hitter, so you have the 9-hole hitter on deck. Like, was the idea if Scott gives up another base runner that Pressly's going to come on to face the 9-hole to try to get you out of the inning, but then what do you do in the 8th? Are you going back with Pressly to face 2-3-4?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't really – my best guess is the pocket of the lineup. That said, that still doesn't add up, because if Taylor Scott gives up a runner, then Pressly's coming on to face the 9-hole hitter. If he stays on in the 8th inning, then he's pitching against the top of the order, which Brian Abreu came into the game to face 9-1-2. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea. Maybe they got the phone lines crossed up. Like, it really does not make any sense to me that Presley was up to in the seventh inning, and then you get out of the inning, and then you flip it over to Brian Abreu. It makes no sense to me.
To me, and you think about it, because based on availability, who was available, who wasn't, and you want to close this game out, you want to do it the right way, I'm expecting to get at least three outs for both Abreu and Presley, and maybe more because of how taxed the bullpen had been. But yeah, it was a little bit, you got it twisted. I mean, I didn't understand it at the time, and I was trying to figure out, like, was he trying to reverse the order? Because it almost seemed like he would have preferred to have Abreu close the game out, but then maybe you're right. Maybe based on matchups, I would prefer Abreu against the best hitters in that lineup.
That's my best guess, but then it was the same matchups. Like, it's weird to me that he had, like, I want somebody to give me their best explanation why Ryan Presley got up with two outs in the seventh inning, only to sit down once Taylor Scott got out of the seventh, and they flip-flopped him with Brian Abreu in the eighth. It was weird to me. 713-780-ESPN. Did you see all this Altuve love? Altuve, yeah. Magic, said Joe Espada. Dubon, that's what Altuve does. Bregman, that's what Altuve does. Everybody on the internet is going nuts about Altuve. And I understand that this is who Jose Altuve is, but like, okay, this is not a great approach at the plate. You do have the exact same situation 100 times. It usually is going to be a very negative result. Secondly, it was a little tapper back to the pitcher. If it's hit 1 foot towards first base, you don't score the run. It's not like it was hit with any sort of authority. And then, oh yeah, let's forget completely about what happened in the fifth inning with runners at second and third, one out, Jose Altuve striking out. The whole Altuve magic, and look, I love Jose Altuve. He's my favorite player. He's going to go down as one of the best second basemen in Major League Baseball history. I have a problem when people go too far. And reading this Altuve magic in the third, when it wasn't a great approach, and then striking out in the fifth inning and everybody ignoring that, kind of rubbed me the wrong way this morning, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I was a little bit leery of people giving him roses and flowers and accolades, because I think it was the Anaheim series this weekend when he swung at a pitch that literally started bouncing about 57 feet on a breaking ball that ended up in the other batter's box when he would have gotten deep into the count. And instead, he swung and missed and struck out. And I'm like, what's he doing? He goes through these stretches where he just flails at really bad pitches for a really good hitter. And you can't figure out or put your finger on and say any reason why he would do that.
Yeah. It's who he is. Like, it's who he is. And, like, is it impressive that he was able to touch a baseball that was a foot outside? Yeah, I mean, that's impressive. Yes, it shows elite bat-to-ball skills. Is that ideal? Probably not. 713-780-ESPN. Only other thing I had was I don't like Jordan taking extra bases and sliding. The whole play at second.
Did you watch him after the slide,
yeah,
too?
He was, like, messing with his
knee.
He
sure was.
I was like, I don't like seeing that.
No, he kept messing with the knee, and as much as they were talking about how he was, you know, getting, stretching out extra base hits and showing his speed, I'm like, are you watching him right now? Because it doesn't look like he just got a strawberry on his knee. He keeps tweaking it and stretching it and touching it. I'm like, the last thing you need right now is to have that big man spend any time anywhere other than in the lineup.
713. Yeah, exactly. You have anything else? Or that we pretty much cover it there.
I love Taylor Scott on this team. I've seen enough of him that I'm convinced now that this guy's not only a big league pitcher, which I wasn't convinced of when he made the opening day roster and when he started pitching early in the season, but when you see him and you see that his stuff translates to whoever he's facing and how he pitches, yeah, he's going to have a little shaky time from here to there. I have confidence when that guy's in the game.
Yeah, I did too. They say he kind of abandoned his sinker a little bit, changed his approach, which everybody bangs on Murphy and Miller. I wonder if anybody's praising Murphy and Miller for the work on Taylor with an E. Scott. I doubt it.
Do we call it a sweeper? His other pitch?
I guess.
Whatever you call it, it's effective.
Yeah, I hate that term. I'm pretty anti-sweeper, just like I'm anti-saying X. Like, I stay with Twitter. Like, I have a hard time adding sweeper to my repertoire.
When he can locate a fastball and then it comes out of his hands looking like it's going to be over the center of the plate and then sweeps to the other side of the batter's box, whatever you call it, it's effective.
Yeah, it is. His arm slot is something that's really cool. They call it a slider. Baseball Savant says he throws a four-seam, a slider, changeup, and then that sinker he throws less than 10% of the time now. He used to throw it like over 30% of the time. Penn Murphy's also like somebody just to keep an eye on, not that it's a story or anything. They showed him in the dugout during yesterday's game.
Yeah,
remember him from Seattle? Like he would throw from way down here.
I forgot that he was on the recovering from an injury on the roster until they showed him, and then Blummer was talking about how he had to introduce himself to him. I'm like, hey, introduce yourself to the lineup maybe at some point this season because that could help.
Yeah, he can. I mean, if he gets back to 100%, he's coming off TJ too. Mm-hmm. He can certainly be an addition to this bullpen. He can help you. 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. Tomorrow's the U.S. Open. If you didn't know, Pinehurst number 2. They're going back there. Will Doctor, who is our resident golf expert. Best golf handicapper in the world. He's up like, we'll give you the stats, but he's up like 60 units on the year. I think he won 13 units last week at the Memorial. He'll join us at 3:45. Somebody telling the Texans to shut up. I love this article. We'll honor the late Jerry West passing away today. Rest in peace. We'll make mock drafts great again with the Rockets as well. And then who does this Astros front office best resemble that we've seen in this state? Plenty to get to. 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube. We're on YouTube as well at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on the Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on the Twitter. Coming up next, we're seeing more and more talk about one Trevor Bauer. Why are we seeing talk about one Trevor Bauer? It's the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925. Look, You guys are tired of potholes. We know that. You're tired of having to deal with asphalt to fix these potholes or for other purposes, parking lot, ranch road, lay down yard, truck parking, maybe to level your concrete, whether it's your driveway, whether it's your sidewalk, whatever the case may be. Big money in the asphalt game. You're tired of wasting the money. You want this fixed. Well, the best way to do it is with mechanical concrete. What is mechanical concrete? Well, it's Third Rock Renewables' patented technology, which is the only low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base that turns these end-of-life tires into a virtually indestructible building product. Anywhere that you need asphalt, well, stop using the asphalt, get the mechanical concrete, and it's going to change your life for the better. You're never going to have to worry about this stuff again. It's going to cut your maintenance costs by 75% or more. It lowers your carbon emissions if you're into that sort of thing. And if you mention ESPN 97.5, an additional 20% off. Get rid of asphalt. Use mechanical concrete. Call Third Rock Renewables right now to figure out how they can help you. Free to call. Get the information. And then once you get the information, you're probably going to use them. 713-305-0507. Figure out how mechanical concrete can change your life for the good. 713-305-0507. Or visit them online. ThirdRockRenewables.com. ThirdRockRenewables.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we'll get to the Trevor Bauer stuff in a moment. 713-780-ESPN. Got a caller on the HRMP listener line. Let's talk Stros. Larry. Larry in Stafford, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. Great show. Just heard rumors about the Astros might be in the market for Pete Alonso or Pablo Schmidt.
Yeah.
How do y'all feel about that? And how do you feel about Joey Chestnut being discriminated against? I hang up to listen. Thank you.
Larry sounds a whole lot like Eric Wong that calls Dell and John a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he just changes his name a lot.
Oh, I heard him talking about how he has like an alter ego. So maybe it would be probably him.
Several.
Yeah, so it was
because he sounds like it. It sounds like his voice.
So what's the purpose of going to the alter ego?
Because a lot of times he has ridiculous things that he wants to say on the radio, and it gets under the skin of Dell and others.
Oh, I can admire that. I appreciate that.
And he calls them out.
Yeah. I do appreciate that. Yeah, which one of those do you want to handle first? The hot dog or the Alonzo Goldschmidt thing?
The Joey Chestnut thing is easy to me because of the fact that there's no contractual deal in place or anything that says you can't have sponsors. He gets paid. I mean, don't hate on the man for getting paid. He got paid. He got a sponsorship deal. Yeah, it's not Nathan's hot dogs. But at the same time, the reason why people are so jacked up in part about your contest every year is because you got this dude that just trounces the field by just putting in massive amounts of hot dogs. And now you just took him away. It's going to be interesting the reaction and how many people are still there. And because I heard the other competitors go, well, now we got a chance. Well, if that's the Babe Ruth of your sport,
yeah,
don't take him out.
I'm pro Nathan's here. Like, you can't allow a guy to sign with a competitor and then be. It's like if you're a Nike school and you're wearing Adidas. Like, you can't do it. You just can't do it. Plus, it's a vegan company. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I'm pro meat in this case.
The question is, though, was he trying to eat Impossible Dogs, or would he be eating the Nathan's
dogs? I think it was just because they weren't going to let him like endorse it on the stage. I don't think he was going to try to eat Impossible Dogs. I don't know that for sure, but I doubt it.
Yeah, that was the one question I had, because other than that, I mean, I guess I understand if you like, but golfers wear all the different logos of all the different brands. NBA guys, I mean, he's a pro eater. He's part of that pro, they have a logo and everything for the pro eating league.
Yeah.
So if you're a pro, you should be able to have endorsement deals, and pros wear Nikes and Adidas and other shoes.
I mean, it depends on the collective bargaining agreement of the National Eating League, because there's some spots you can't. Like, I mean, this year, Major League Baseball, they wear Nike uniforms. Mm-hmm. You can't just be like, cover up the Nike and put like a Reebok on it. Now, the shoe thing's different, but that's collectively bargained. I mean, it's all the bylaws of it or whatever. Personally, I don't care that much. Like, I don't watch this anyways. I think it's gross and disgusting, and it's never done anything for me. Now, he was offered a contract from Nathan's, I was reading this morning, of $1.2 million for
what
4 years.
I heard it was like $270,000.
I did the math, $300,000, okay. So roughly same ballpark. That's insane. That's insane. Make $300,000 a year. And I'm sure he's doing other things to make additional money. He's probably north of $1 million a year.
But I think the deal that he has with Impossible is like 1.2.
It had to have been more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had to have been
more. I thought it was at least $1 million.
If he's willing to be banned from the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, it has to be more. So $1 million endorsement. He probably does other competitive eating stuff where he's probably getting another $500,000. The dude makes $1.5 million to stuff things down his throat fast.
And then probably throwing up within 30 minutes.
What a gig. What a job. I mean, if I was capable of doing it, I would do it. I have no problem doing it.
Yeah, but the problem
is, I just don't have the talent.
It's like you keep doing that in like your auto racing or whatever, and you're stepping on the – and you're pushing the engine. The problem is, at a certain point when your engine goes, you can replace the parts. Your esophagus and your stomach,
yeah.
It's a little different story for how many times you're stretching it out and
you're doing a lot of
doing
damage
those
to
things.
It.
Yeah.
Goldschmidt, Alonso.
Look, having seen Paul Goldschmidt here pretty up close and personal, I didn't think that he had the same swing that he had catching up to fastballs. I think Pete Alonso's got a lot left in the tank. I also think he wants a lot of money, and I don't know that Jim Crane wants to pay him a lot of money. But of the two guys, if I had to choose, I would see what the Mets wanted for Alonso. But Alonso's probably – they're going to probably command the, a lot of picks like they did when they traded Jeu Verlander back.
I'm probably on the other side of this than you. Now, I don't think you were going to re-sign Pete Alonso. So, like, the contract to me isn't, like, I don't think that would be the issue, because I think it'd be a complete rental.
I didn't know he was up his final year.
So then you have, like, prospects. Okay, you don't have a great minor league system. How much do you continue wanting to deplete this minor league system in an attempt to try to continue throwing things into this team that right now is out of the playoffs and, what's 5-6 games below 500? So I think that the price is too rich probably there for Pete Alonso, and I'm not sure that the Astros, quite frankly, have the prospects to outbid other teams that will also be in on Alonso. Goldschmidt is interesting to me. Now, you're going to have to get creative. And Goldschmidt, like, yes, he got off to a terrible start. Goldschmidt recently had a 44-game on-base streak. He reached base, even with his poor start, he had reached base safely in 44 straight games. So, like, that's way more production than you've been getting at first base. Now, he has a big salary, and he still has an additional – no, he's done it this year. It's Abreu that has a big salary that has an additional year. So Goldschmidt would also be a rental. Now, I'm not taking Goldschmidt back unless I can find a way that I can shed some salary too, because Goldschmidt's contract's pretty high. So if I'm acquiring Goldschmidt, I want to either like throw in a Rafael Montero. Perfect world, you're throwing in Jose Abreu and paying off 95% of the salary. But I think you can find a creative way to make the Goldschmidt thing happen. A lot of things have to happen. The finances you have to work out, because that will be complicated. I think it's possible, but complicated. And then secondly, Cardinals will also need to fall out of the race. Like right now, they're still in the race. They've been mentioned as buyers, not sellers. But if they do fall out of the race, they are sellers. You're still getting nothing at first base. You can make the contract, the financial situation of the trade work. I would be intrigued for Paul Goldschmidt to be on this team, because I think he's an upgrade over Abreu, and I think he's an upgrade over Singleton, who did have a good day at the plate yesterday.
This bottle right here might be an upgrade over Jose Abreu.
I know.
So I'm with you on that. I think the one thing that I would say in defense of your argument is, if you put Goldschmidt in this lineup, I think it's a far more talented offensive lineup. He might even see better pitches. And look, he's been a good contact hitter over his career. So I wouldn't mind that, because any upgrade at first base is better than what you have with Jose Abreu. Now, you do have some guys within your system that seem to be hitting the ball okay that you could still probably work in there, but he's a proven, you know, proven veteran player that can hit the baseball.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. So there's been a lot of conversation about one Trevor Bauer. Astros, they went and watched his bullpen. There's also been reports. People said that there's no way they're going to sign him. Here were the Killer G's talking about Bauer yesterday.
What's hurting you right now is that your bullpen, which is very expensive, cannot close out games, and your lineup getting hits, but leaving eight on base, going 3-for-11 with runners in scoring position, and scoring just one run against a 22-year-old who'd allowed at least three earned runs in the five starts before. Is Trevor Bauer fixing those two issues? And is bringing in somebody who probably will be at odds with everybody in the clubhouse going to really make much of an impact?
Let's remove the name Trevor Bauer. Adding a starting pitcher to the Astros does not make Ryan Pressly good. It does not make Rafael Montero good. It does not fix your issues at first base. It does not fix your issues in left field when Chaz McCormick is out there. It does not fix your issues when Jeremy Peña is playing lackadaisical and not good defense. It does not fix your issues when Yainer Diaz and Kyle Tucker are hurt because they can't stop hitting foul balls off themselves. It just doesn't solve your problems.
That bum Kyle Tucker, man. I tell you, he's Yainer a clown. He's a bozo hitting balls off his shin, kneecap.
Yeah, Yainer Diaz didn't foul a ball off. He got hit behind the plate, didn't he?
Yeah, on a ball that was tipped foul. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thoughts?
Well, and Jeremy Peña is an outstanding defender that had a ball that basically was ruled a base hit the next day.
Yeah, he was
you he didn't make an error on that play.
Now, I think that Peña should have made the play. To be fair to Joe, I think Peña should have made that play. And this was them talking yesterday after the night where Peña did make the play.
Yeah, screw Joe. my whole opinion on this and everybody that's losing their mind over this is it's not what you need. Like, we just got done talking about a great start by Blanco. We've seen Arrigetti get better and better now that he's settling in. You're getting good pitching from the top of your rotation. JV is JV, and I still believe he'll be fine. This is not what's been ailing you. Your pitching has been great with the exception of, yes, the back of the bullpen has imploded a few times. We know that. But then if you're doing anything at all, you might look for a closer. This guy has gotten into it with guys on your team like Alex Bregman. This guy is a disaster off the field. This guy is just a hurricane of possible negativity. And he's coming in to do what you already have plenty of guys that are capable of doing with two guys on the mend, possibly getting ready to help you even more down the road. You need offense. You need some hitting. You need some guys in this lineup that can fortify a weak-ass first base situation that is completely getting weaker by the day when your owner and his buddies keep force-feeding you a guy into the lineup that does no good. And the fact that your left field situation when Yordan's not out there is not the guy that should be playing. And you got to figure out where Yiner's best fit is, but at least Caratini's back behind the plate. There are ways that you can upgrade this team that will make this team better, and I don't think Trevor Bauer fits any of them.
Okay. I don't want Trevor Bauer on this baseball team, but I don't like your argument. I don't like the Killer G's argument. I'll tell you why next. But also, if the Astros are indeed buyers, let's say they're trying to add on at the deadline, what should they be looking to upgrade? Who do you want? And I'm going to counter that. I'm going to push back a little bit, too. 713-780-3776. It's the Beast on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure and getting your hair back or strengthening the hair that you have, because he has two different ways that can really help you if you're experiencing any of those type issues. First and foremost, you can start with PRP. It's easier, it's faster, and it's effective. It's like fertilizing your lawn. You already have grass on the lawn. You just need it to be thicker and stronger and show more together growth. Well, that's what PRP can do. But if Doc Linville looks at you and says, you know what, I just don't think PRP is going to get it done. You've already lost too much. It's going to be tough to salvage all the hair that you have. We can give you more, because 95% to 99% of the follicles that he moves, and that's right, he moves follicles. He basically told me, you never lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. So he's going to move some of those and put them where you need them most. Maybe it's in the front at your hairline or up on top and back. The fact is that it's 95 to 99% successful. He says more to 99%, but he'll say 95% to be safe. It's a game changer. When I did it, I could not believe that almost immediately I saw all the follicles there. They were all lined up to grow in the same direction. They were all going to be right there, and they started to grow with every passing day. They got settled in. They got stronger. They got the thicker growth. And before you know it, in 6 to 9 months, I had my hairline back. It was amazing. And you can do the same thing. As a listener to ESPN 97.5, you get a free consultation with Doc and his staff. It literally should cost you $150 if you were just someone off the street. But if you go to 975hair.com and set up your appointment, it's free. Nothing out of pocket, no signing on the dotted line, no commitment to make, just you getting your questions answered and getting everybody to explain to you what the NeoGraft is, what PRP can do, and see if it's right for you. It was right for me. I think he's the best in the business. Check him out today. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN
97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Will Doctor will be joining us in 10 minutes. He, best golf handicapper in the land. Doctor's in to prescribe you some winners. He'll be joining us in 10 minutes. U.S. Open, well, handicapping there. All right, so the Trevor, like, first off, before he gets Trevor Bauer, Paul left his J-Bar M remnants here.
Yeah, I saw
which,
that.
I mean, thank you to J-Bar-M for bringing lunch to the Killer G's and not the Killer B's. Love J-Bar-M. J-Bar-M's fantastic. It is the very best. And like, hey, they're going to get here when they get here. That's their prerogative, and we're not upset about that. But how about Paul leaving the box of his eaten ribs to you guys? Here's a little salt in the wound. We got food y'all didn't, and I'm going to have you smell all of my trash while you're in there.
Well, I know.
Unbelievable. Bush League.
You are smarter than me in the fact that you don't listen to them on the way in, and I do. And I heard them trashing us and already assuming that we would be angry and be the typical angry bees because we didn't get food, and then started talking about, and then God forbid if Paul leaves sticky stuff and barbecue sauce where I sit, and I'm like, I said Joe a text. He's like, I'm predicting right now they're both going to be extremely upset. And I texted him. I said, hey, Nostra dumbass, there's no way that I'm mad. It's okay, you got the food. But then on top of it, to leave it out here. Yeah. After bashing us on the air is one thing. And then Paul takes – you talk about what time they get off the air. Paul took like an hour and a half to get out of here today.
Oh, did he?
I'm just sitting there with my laptop in my hand going, no worries. I'm good. We're starting the show. I'm putting my headsets on while the Open's playing. Going, yeah, I'll set up in a minute. We're good.
Yeah, I guess he did. I guess I realized that and didn't even realize
we
that.
We started a story with you and I, and we were 15 seconds from going on the air.
That was a good story, though. I liked hearing that story. I didn't realize you were talking about, but I talked to him just outside, and he told me who it was. I was like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. Anyways, here's why I don't like the Trevor Bauer. I do not want Trevor Bauer anywhere near the Astros, for the record. I just don't really love your reasoning. I don't love the Killer G's reasoning. Like the whole, well, you know, starting pitching is not your problem. Relief pitching is your problem. Outfield is your problem. Hitting with runners in scoring position is your problem. Okay, I hear you on that, and you're right. You're not wrong there. But why would you ignore elevating yourself somewhere else just because you're weak at other positions? Like, if you're presented with a new car that's a better car, but your car's already all right, but the new one's better, and someone's like, here you go, you can have this, of course you're going to say yes. And Trevor Bauer, you're not trading anything. You're not like, and again, I'm not advocating for Bauer. I know this is going to sound like it, but you're not trading anything for Trevor Bauer. So it's not like you're paying a premium on starting pitching at the trade deadline when you could be using those players to address all of the other issues. And he's also talked about how he would be willing to sign for the league minimum. So again, this is like adding any jabroni that you're claiming off of waivers. So you're not giving any assets. You're not using your assets, which turned like into opportunity cost, on addressing other positions. So like, to me, it's all case by case. Like, because if the Astros were to do this, and they're not, but if the Astros like, yes, we're gonna bring in Trevor Bauer. Okay, so what? Like, yes, he's not going to help Presley or Montero or Chaz or hit with runners in scoring position. But if you can elevate the team in any way, why would you say no to that? Like, so the whole, well, he does not this issue. He's not fixing this issue. He's not fixing that issue. I don't care. If you have a chance to make yourself better, even if it's a position where you think you're strong, you do it. Now, again, I don't want Bauer because of the off-the-field stuff. I don't think his stuff is nearly as good as it used to be. I think he has a chance to just kill the clubhouse, et cetera, et cetera. But those are the reasons. Those are the reasons I don't want Trevor Bauer, not because Rafael Montero and Ryan Presley are bad.
That's right. Those were the G's argument. Mine is on the case, the specific case, too, of Trevor Bauer. Like, and I'm adamant, too. I don't think they should go out and get another starting pitcher unless it – if you can find me some way where they're going to find a top of the rotation type guy, and you don't have to give up a lot to get him because of the fact that their farm system, they don't have the kind of assets a lot of teams do, then that's, but Trevor Bauer specifically, like I'm not sure he's a good pitcher anymore. I don't need to take on any more headaches or to try and screw up anything in the clubhouse based on how screwed up this season has been. I don't think that he is the type of pitcher that they're looking for. And because you have been getting good starting pitching, if you want to tell me you're trading for a reliever, cool. If you want to tell me you're going to upgrade the offense in some way, great. Because the offense can hit the baseball, and we already talked about the problem spots, where they lie and why they're probably sitting in the situation they are with those spots. But the fact is that runners in scoring position, sometimes that's just, it's tough to explain. They're hitting, they can hit for average. They've got capable guys in this lineup, and there are ways to upgrade this team. And you're right, it's a case-by-case basis. I don't want Trevor Bauer, and I personally don't think they should be chasing. If they're chasing and looking, I don't think they should be looking at a starting pitcher.
Yeah. And, like, that's where, like, their argument makes sense if you were to trade for, like, I don't even know starting pitchers that are going to be available right now. Mikolas. Like, Mikolas has pitched really good in his last two games. Like, okay, now you're trading prospects to add a starting pitcher, which is going to hurt your chances of adding a left fielder, adding some relief pitching help, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the case with Trevor Bauer. You're not trading anything or spending any significant money on Trevor Bauer that prevents you from having the opportunity to fixing the other areas. So I don't understand, well, you know, starting pitching is not the issue, but back into the bullpen or middle bullpen or hitting runners in scoring position. So what? If you have a chance to help the team, you help the team, especially when it's not going to cost you resources that you can then use to address those other issues. So again, I'm anti-Bauer. I don't want Trevor Bauer here. I just didn't love the reasonings that they gave.
Yeah, because
Jeremy Payne is bad at defense and Trevor Bauer is not going to fix that? What? How does that make any sense?
Now, Jeremy Payne's not bad at defense.
No, but I mean, but it's separate issues.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But here's my thing, too. I'm with you if it's a – I've been the guy that's always using kick the tires. You got to turn over every stone and kick the tires on every possible guy that can make you better. Like when you said Brandon Belt, cool. I'm good with that because you know what? Costs you nothing. Yes, you have to pay him, but you don't have to give up anything to get him, and he should be an upgrade over what you got. If there's another starting pitcher not named Trevor Bauer with the past of Trevor Bauer and the history with this team and all the other stuff that he's done, and he's a better pitcher, and he's sitting out there in the wind with nothing to give up to get him, yes, yeah. Kick the tires. Go look at him pitch and see if he can help you. Because now maybe one of those starters you have penciled in can go to the bullpen and help you in that bullpen as well. And you spread it out. You do it a different way. There's a different. There's a million different formulas that can work. I just don't think Trevor Bauer is a formula that I
want to
see.
Yeah, I don't want Bauer either. But it's just like, okay, you can add this piece to upgrade your starting rotation or your pitching staff altogether. Like you said, some of the texters are saying, like, okay, well, adding another pitcher to the pitching staff, maybe that lowers Montero in the pecking order of the depth chart. Maybe even, I doubt it would lower Presley, but you add another arm that it could make Montero's innings a little bit more less leverage. But the whole, like, okay, well, you know, he's not going to help your problems with runners in scoring position. No, I agree with you. He's not going to help your problems with runners in scoring position. But what if the other team has less runs because he is a better pitcher than whoever your number five is or whoever your last guy on the pitching staff is? So, yeah, I'm not going to fix an area that's a strength because he doesn't fix an issue that is a weakness. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. It's kind of like it's a little similar to like the Texans signing Danielle Hunter. Like, well, we already have Will Anderson. We already have Danico Autry that we're bringing in. Why should we sign Danielle Hunter? He's not fixing an issue. He's not fixing one of our holes. Nobody's upgrading one of your strengths. And shouldn't you be looking to upgrade across the board whenever you're presented the opportunity? Same thing with Stephon Diggs. Like, okay, your weakness is running back. Well, we missed out on a weakness at running back. So instead of that, okay, how can we help the team? How about we add a strength to what is already a strong wide receiver room? Like, these things are case by case. Just because he doesn't fix an issue doesn't mean it doesn't mean that it wouldn't make your team better. And again, I don't like that I'm sounding like this because it sounds like I'm advocating for Trevor Bauer, and I'm not. What if he would be willing to pitch out of the bullpen and you could replace Montero with Bauer? Well, that's a good point. Like, that now does help the Rafael Montero problem.
Look, you know, and I watched some of the highlights last night, I know, and Chafin pitched again in Detroit. And again, to your point, I mean, a lot of these teams have to be just completely out of it, and they're going to start unloading. But, you know, I like adding a lefty bullpen guy that has experience. I like adding a guy that can help no matter what you want to do with Presley or Montero or the fact that you're taxed because you keep throwing the same guys out there over and over again. But I'm not interested in Trevor Bauer, and I'm more interested in guys that aren't going to cost you a whole lot on a rental.
Yeah, and I hated that. That's like my argument there, because I don't want Trevor Bauer. I want nothing to do with Trevor Bauer. But the reasoning there, I didn't love. 713-780-ESPN. The doctor is in. He's going to prescribe some winners at the U.S. Open when we come back. Will Doctor, best golf handicapper you'll ever see, joins us next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line, being joined by the very best golf handicapper you can find, Will Doctor. You can find him on Twitter, DRMedia59. He's here. He's here every weekend. Charlie Epps, Golf Hour with Charlie Epps, podcast on Pregame Now. Will won he was up 13.8 units at Memorial last week. And this year to date, he's up 69.1 units. He's making the people money. Go check out the podcast on Pregame Now. Listen to it a little bit last night, a little bit this morning. Will, thanks for joining. U.S. Open begins tomorrow. Pinehurst, number two, 25th anniversary of Payne Stewart winning the U.S. Open. I'm sure we'll hear a lot about that. Certainly a sad story. On his flight to Houston, actually, was whenever he lost cabin pressure, and then it went down. Terrible, terrible story. And I'm sure we'll hear a lot about it this week. But how's the course looking for the U.S. Open? What's it going to take for a golfer to win this bad boy coming up this weekend, Will?
Jeremy and Joel, I'm fired up for Pinehurst. Thanks for having me on. But, yeah, we're finally back at a traditional OG U.S. Open test. Obviously, Los Angeles Country Club last year had a really corporate feel to it. Over 50% of the tickets last year went to corporate America and, you know, the membership at LACC. And that's really not what the U.S. Open is all about. The U.S. Open is a time of the year typically, you know, held at a public golf course, Bethpage, Shinnecock, of course, Pinehurst. Anyone, you know, from the public can go and play any of the Pinehurst courses. So number one, I just think you have a more of a USGA championship feel this weekend. We saw that on Monday as the place was already sold out. And number two, you know, the greens, we heard from defending champion Wyndham Clark, Victor Hovland, Tiger Woods. The greens are already baked out at Pinehurst, and the weather all week there, mid-90s, going to be very humid. This is going to play a lot different. As much as I love going back and watching the 99 U.S. Open, a lot has changed at Pinehurst since 99. Of course, you know, they switched the grass from bent to Bermuda in 2011, which made chipping and putting around the greens extremely difficult, especially since it's a Donald Ross design. All the greens are bowl-shaped, so you add in grain you know, around these greens, and it's very tough. I mean, you know, when you watch 99, it's more of a wet U.S. Open. 2014 is the U.S. Open you need to watch to get more of a feel of what it's going to look like this week. And you'll see, you know, Martin Keimer en route to, you know, completely lapping the field. Every time he missed a green, he pretty much pulled out putter and used the Texas wedge around the greens. You're going to see a lot of that this week as well. Guys hitting three hybrids, five woods, putters around the greens to try to get it up and down. And the key to this week in anyone's game when we're picking our winner is someone who can make the right decisions off the tee. Pinehurst is not a place where you're just going to rip driver off every tee box. Some holes call for a six or five iron off the tee. After the guys are off the tee, when it comes to approach shots, maybe the most important thing of the week is keeping the ball pin high or below pin high. If I could place a bet that world number one Scotty Scheffler is not going to miss one green long this week, I would place that bet. Guys like Rory McIlroy, you know, Colin Morikawa, guys that go at pins, play a little bit more aggressively, they're more prone to making that U.S. Open big number and shooting themselves out of the tournament. I want someone that's smart and has a decisive game plan this week at Pinehurst.
Well, and let's just start with the leader entering the clubhouse before the tournament starts, Will, and that's Scottie Scheffler. He's been on a heater. He's been phenomenal. Is there any reason why we should believe that maybe it's the course setup or any other factor that says he shouldn't be the favorite again this week?
No, the best odds on Scottie Scheffler right now, plus 333 to win on MGM. That's a green light special. I'm going to be all over that for a number of reasons. Clearly, the obvious is he's having a ball striking year to the caliber of Tiger Woods in 2000. Golf Channel is going to tell you that. Everywhere is going to tell you that. But you look deeper into what he's doing, tee to green. Scheffler is fourth in scrambling right now on the PGA Tour. He's got that creativity we're looking for around the greens. And then, you know, the last 12 events, since he's figured out the putting with Phil Kenyon, Scheffler has climbed all the way to first in putting average on the PGA Tour. So off the tee box, from the fairway, around the greens and on the greens, he's just on a special run. And John Rahm said it yesterday. Rory said it yesterday. Those two have no experience winning the Masters, the Players, and three signature events all before the halfway point of the season. I mean, we could see, I think it is very possible, we see Scheffler get to 9 wins, 2 majors, and a gold medal in Paris by the end of this season. And, of course, we really haven't seen an 8-9-win season since Vijay Singh in 2004 and Tiger in 2000.
Yeah, he's having an unbelievable year. Being joined by Will Doctor, DR Media 5-9, podcast pregame now. You can catch him here on ESPN 97.5 over the weekends as well. Up 69 units, 69-plus units on the year. Will, what are your favorite bets this weekend?
Well, I think starting, you know, with, you know, if you want to start with maybe a couple picks to place, talking about the live guys, obviously I like Bryson DeChambeau to win this week, but more of a ticket that no one's talking about from the live front, I like Cam Smith to top 20 plus 185. I know it hasn't been the season to date that Cam Smith might have hoped for. He didn't play that well earlier in the year. His official world golf ranking has dropped to 72. But he's put together some really good results since April. You know, sixth at the Masters. He had a runner-up finish a couple weeks ago at LIV Singapore. He has the game I'm looking for at Pinehurst. A guy that can make a ton of good decisions off the tee, has no problem hitting 5-6 irons off the tee. He keeps his iron shots out of below pin high, and he's got a brilliant short game that comes from the Aussie sand belt. Very similar conditions around the greens you're going to see this week in comparison to some of the golf you'd watch over in Australia. So I think for pick the place number one, it'd be Cam Smith, the top 20 at plus 185. And Jeremy and Joel, I have a sleeper for y'all that really no one is thinking about, and that's a guy by the name of Frankie Sapin III. And we're going to have him to top 20 this week at 14-1. Sapin was a medalist at the Durham, North Carolina final qualifying location. He made it through with rounds of 68, 66 at Duke University Golf Club. I was covering that qualifier that day, and I was not surprised that Sapin made it. He's eighth on the Korn Ferry Tour money list. He's not on the PGA Tour yet, but he's only 24 years old. He's eighth on the KFP money list, so he's probably going to get his PGA Tour card next year. And he already has experience playing well at Pinehurst. The 2017 U.S. four ball took place at Pinehurst in 2017. Frankie Sapin won that week. So between the course history and how well he's been playing as of late, Frankie Sapin III, a guy is no one is talking about. We're going to have him top 20 at 14-1 this week.
Well, how's your analytics when you start rolling into the relationship factor and how that might negatively or positively affect golfers on the PGA Tour? Because Rory McIlroy has been pretty good all year, but now he's getting divorced, he's filing papers, now he's reconciling with his wife. Does that help? Does that hurt? Does that even factor in?
I don't really look at it as a factor this week. Obviously, just like in any sports, you've got your athletes who can compartmentalize better than others. Tiger, clearly a great compartmentalizer. You're seeing Scottie Scheffler. He's had him and his wife Meredith delivered a baby this month. He got arrested by a total clown at Valhalla a week later, and he still found a way to go on this Hogan Byron Nelson-esque run. So I think it depends who you're talking about. Rory likes to get involved in of course the PIF PGA Tour drama, and you know, he supposedly had an officer from Palm Beach deliver the papers to his wife on the Monday after Wells Fargo to get divorced. Clearly, He's a little more into the drama, Rory is. But that has nothing to do with my take on him this week. I'm out on Rory McIlroy this week because he hasn't shown that he can make disciplined decisions out of the fairway, particularly with his irons from 175 yards and in. He gets way too aggressive, and you cannot be aggressive at Pinehurst this week. Bryson DeChambeau talked about it. Scottie Scheffler talked about it. You got to be aiming at the center of the greens to play well at Pinehurst. I don't think Rory has the discipline to do that.
Tiger's had some success here, Will. Now, it's been a while since he's had some success in tournaments. How does Pinehurst number two fare for him?
Yeah, he's not on my card, but I don't mind Jeremy and Joel. You'd have to check what his number is to make the cut. If there's a U.S. Open venue that I don't mind rolling the dice on Tiger on, I think it would have to be Pinehurst. This is an easy walk. There's not too much slope. It's pretty short in distance for a U.S. Open venue, and it's going to be very humid, which means Tiger won't have a whole bunch of stress and pressure on that leg. He likes the humidity for that leg that was nearly amputated 2 years ago. I think if you're a diehard Tiger fan, I have no problem with Tiger's chances of making the cut this week in Pinehurst.
What about my X factor? You know, I have to ask because last time we chatted, Xander finally pushed through.
That's right.
He got
you
a big one,
Joel.
So is he going to be a factor this week, or is he going to be Xander that gets in the top five, top 10, but just falls short, or is he going to be completely out of it this week?
I like Xander's top 10 picking. And if you're a Xander fan, I think you have the green light on him once again. He has a fantastic overall resume at U.S. Opens. And obviously, Joel, you called it. He won his first major at Valhalla last month where he fended off Bryson DeChambeau. I would have loved to have found a matchup on Xander this week, but he's only featured in matchups over Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler, and Rory McIlroy. I'm out on those matchups, and I'm out on his 12-1 ticket. He's not on my card, but a top 10 ticket, and if you're a diehard fan, I think Xander's going to have just as good a chance as anyone this week at Pinehurst.
Will, we always appreciate the time. Should be a fun weekend at Pinehurst number two. You can follow Will at DRMedia59 on Twitter, podcast on Pregame Now with Charlie Epps on weekends here as well. Appreciate the time and keep crushing it.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Joel.
Will Doctor joining us to preview the U.S. Open begins tomorrow. Cannot wait. Jason Braddock. He told the Texans to shut up. What is he talking about? Is he right? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One of the great things that you can do this summer is getting a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. They're fun. If one, it's going to be great for you. If you're a basketball fan, you like to shoot some hoops, get a goal from Pro Dunk. It's better than any goal you're going to find in the big box stores. Those are cheap. They're not very good. That's very different than the goals from Pro Dunk. These are the very best, true, authentic feel. Plus, the best part about having a goal from Pro Dunk is if you have kids who like basketball, you get them out of the house, you get them out of your hair, get a goal for that alone. Pro Dunk Hoops makes the highest quality basketball goals, tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware. It's rust-proof, which is critical in Houston, and it's height-adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet, and their new goal, Thor. You can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's called the Lightning Adjust feature. It's easy to do. It's fun to do. 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Get your hands on Thor, and you'll be glad that you did. Their accessories are next level, too. Look, it gets it stays a little bit lighter than normal in the summer, of course, but it gets cooler at night once the sun goes down. So get LED light kits. That way you can play into the night when the weather cools down a little bit. Backstop nets. You don't want to chase the basketball around. Pull pad lettering. Lots more. And you can order all of this, including professional installation online at ProDunk.com. Yes, the pros will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't have to worry about a box delivered to your driveway, hundreds of pieces to assemble. You don't have to worry about any of that. You just say, hey, come on out, deliver it. The pros from ProDunk will be there to install your goal perfectly straight, perfectly level. You'll never have to worry about it. Let the pros of ProDunk do the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
ESPN 97.5.